SMQBs, this is episode 170. House, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
Carter Verhaeghe has got to save it for the Panthers tonight. I mean, by the time this is played for our audience, please, for the sake of these poor Florida Panthers fans, sorry, Canada, Carter Verhaeghe has got to come through to avoid the most historical abomination. He's got to come through.
Milk?
Well, we're on the same page because I'm taking Paul Maurice to the bar, the head coach of the Florida Panthers, who has won his four previous game sevens. We'll see if that could come into play tonight. We'll see if there's a fifth. It's been an unbelievable turnaround, not in their favor, the last three games. We'll see what happens tonight. Lots of pressure. We'll talk about it a little bit later, though. Paul Maurice.
All right. We'll see. All right, So I've got two to deliver. Number one, I've got Rooster. Rooster's not with us tonight, so I've got his, though. He was dying to bring Jeff Saturday to the bar to sit down with Jeff Saturday and talk about J.J. Redick and what he needs to know going in as a first-time coach. So that was Rooster's. Yeah.
That's a good one.
I think that's an interesting one to go with Jeff Saturday. And then I want to sit down and talk to Sha'Carri Richardson, one of the great U.S. female track stars that we have, who you might remember at the last Olympics was suspended for a marijuana positive test. And she just qualified for the Paris Olympics. And good for her. I'm dying to sit down and know what was going through her mind while she was crossing the finish line and knowing that she was going to get to go to the Olympics after all. So, Pope, you're left. Who are you bringing to a bar this week?
So, guys, we've been talking a lot about college basketball, women's college basketball, and Caitlin Clark, and how she's impacted college basketball, women's basketball, and, you know, international basketball. And I thought that I would bring to the bar none other than the head coach at the college women's program at Penn State University, Miss Carolyn Keeger, who is going to come in and talk to us about all things women's basketball, Caitlin Clark, Olympic roster, you name it. Carolyn, by way of introduction, was a star at Marquette for 3 years. She was a captain. She's the only player with 1,200 points, 400 rebounds, 600 assists for the program. She was on the All Big East and Conference USA teams for 3 years. She was 6 years an assistant at Miami, the U. Then she was head coach at her alma mater, Marquette, for five seasons. And then she came on to Penn State in 2019. And last year, they had a breakthrough year. They made the Final Four of the Women's Basketball Invitational Tournament, lost in a nail-biter to the Nova Wildcats, and looking forward to a big year from Penn State Nittany Lions, and loving to bring Carolyn onto our pod. Carolyn, hello.
Hello, I'm excited to be at the bar with you guys.
Welcome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, we're doing tequila shots.
Let's go. Can I bring a guest to the bar as well?
Yes, I'm please.
Bring
of course.
This week, I'm going to bring Katie Ledecky after, you know, qualifying for Paris.
Good one.
Yeah, swimming over 6,000 meters and winning by 20 seconds. I want to know what her training regimen is like right now, but kudos to her, and I can't wait to watch her in Paris.
She could have done a tequila shot after she won that race. 20 seconds.
That was bananas. It was like you were waiting for anybody else to come into the frame for like 20 seconds. It was not.
Yeah, it really was.
Crazy. Well, Pope, start us off. Let's go. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, let's get into it, Carolyn. Talk to us about your decision to go from, you know, your alma mater to a program like Penn State, and you know, what went into that, and how's the program going?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I've always admired Penn State from afar, you know, back, you know, with Rene Portland and what they were able to do and build the success up. And then Coquise Washington came in and won three straight Big Ten championships. So being a women's basketball fan from afar has always been something where I've kind of admired Penn State. And, you know, for me, coaching at my alma mater in Marquette was, you know, one of the biggest honors of my life. And I look at a program like Penn State and what they've been able to do in the past, but also the untapped potential into the future. And, you know, I wanted to be at a place that wants to chase championships, you know, surround yourself with those on the same mission as you. Penn State's a place where women's volleyball has won national championships, women's soccer, women's lacrosse, gymnastics. So, you know, women's sports has been important to Penn State athletics for a long time. And that was really important to me. And also go to a place that believes in a great education at the same time. So best of both worlds. You got a top 10 academic department and you got a top 10 education. So for me, it was a no-brainer. And now we're here. I've always made my mark in this business as building a builder or as being a builder. You know, at Miami, we went from worst to first. At Marquette, we went from worst to first and won three straight Big East championships. And I think Penn State kind of knew that. You know, the women's program had kind of taken a dive and they hired me to kind of bring it back up to where they thought it could be and go farther than ever. So I'm pumped. We have rolled up our sleeves. It hasn't been easy, but we, I believe, should have been in the NCAA tournament last year. But we're right on the verge of becoming really special and a great place, great state. Excited for the future.
Well, maybe that snub gives you guys a little hunger for the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a Washington, D.C. sports fan, I'm very curious about all this worst to first stuff and how you accomplish that. could you send some tips down to the various teams in the district as to how to accomplish that? It's something I'm very curious about here. How do you do that? How have you managed to do that?
Well, I'll tell you what, a lot of patience, a lot of gray hair and, no, but for real, like what we do is I think we do a lot of player development, you know, and we build the foundation brick by brick. You have to have, you know, an attitude of failing forward, not being afraid to fail, because when you first get there, obviously it's going to be a grind. You're going to have to roll your sleeves up. You're going to have to do it the right way. And you first got to focus on fostering relationships. Then you got to develop leaders and eventually your culture will create wins. But you can't skip steps. And I think everybody, especially nowadays, wants immediate gratification. But if you're trying to build something long term, that's going to sustain and that's going to, you know, weather the test of times versus a quick fix or something that lasts 1 or 2 years, you got to do it the right way. And so for me, at every place that I've been, you know, we've built it and we built it brick by brick. We've done it the right way. We've done it the hard way. And in long term, we've had a lot of success. So we're in the process of doing that now. But I would say biggest thing is being humble. Failure teaches you a lot in the beginning, and then you figure out how to build that culture the right way, and you focus on relationships, and then I said leadership, and then hopefully the championships will come after that.
Well, I think it's a great time to be a head coach in college women's basketball, especially with Caitlin Clark and the impact that looks like she's had on the NCAA women's tournament, and let's get into that. How have you seen her recent popularity affect the game?
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. Obviously, Caitlin is a generational player. I've had so much respect for her. I actually recruited her when I was at Marquette, being a Des Moines kid. She was, you know, in the Midwest and, you know, played at a Catholic high school and just has always been as elite as she was. She won an AAU national Nike championship, kind of led her team there in high school and then has always kind of continued this dominance, as you will. So been a huge fan of her game for the last, I should say 6-7 years. But it's been awesome to see the country rally around her, to get excited about her, to have, the national media picking up her story, putting more games on TV, not only her games, but other women's basketball games. And it's been a phenomenon. It's been, you know, people rallying around her, but also now being able to watch more WNBA games or more NCAA games. But I think she's been the catalyst of it. And it's been really fun to watch. But as women's basketball, you know, coaches, we're excited to see this propel into the future.
Do you expect next year for it to continue?
Sorry, what was that?
Go ahead, Bison.
Well, I was just going to ask. I mean, you know, look, there's so many players who have worked so hard and coaches and who have played, you know, for the love of the game and haven't had the exposure and are playing now and don't have the exposure. How do you sort of manage, you know, that, or how does basketball manage that? Whereas Caitlin's not, the only show in town, and the other players should get their, you know, their due regard also for it. How does that, because it seems like there's a lot of, you know, that's a big question right now, right? She's elevated everything and it's the center stage, but I think even she would say there's so many other people out there who make it such a great game to watch.
Absolutely. Well, she definitely stands on the shoulders of all the women that came before that helped set the stage for her to be able to, you know, now play in the WNBA, to have the media coverage. You know, we've been fighting as a sport. We've been fighting as, you know, women's athletics for a long time to be able to get this coverage. And if you build it, they will come. And, you know, we've been pushing and the envelope to try to get more coverage on national TV. And, you know, we've been selling out our Final Four for some years now, but the TV coverage is finally starting to come around, the social media coverage. And I think sometimes it just takes the right time, the right player, the right superstar, as you will. And you look back, and not only women's sports, but you look back at, you know, even the NBA, you know, Michael Jordan, obviously phenomenal player. He's my favorite of all time, but he was at the right time.
Well, he is the GOAT.
He is the GOAT, right? We could go on debate for that for a long time, right?
Yeah, we could.
No, there's no debate.
We may have had that debate.
No debate.
We've had that debate.
I'm sure we have. but, you know, he capitalized at a time, you know, when Nike was, you know, thriving and they capitalized on him. I thought, you know, even the Dream Team and all that stuff back, it always takes, you know, one time when the moment is right. And I think, you know, Caitlin was ready for it. She seized the moment. And not only her, like Angel Reese and some other players right now. And obviously, yes, there's been phenomenal players before her, and there'll be phenomenal players after her. But I've loved how she's handled herself. I love how humble she's been. I love how she stepped in the spotlight and really kind of carried this torch for the game. And, you know, I can't say enough about how she's weathered all this attention. And, you know, I listened to you guys' you know, episode, I think it was last week, and you guys, you know, talking about her. And I just think even the fact that we're sitting here talking about her and we're having podcasts about her, that's progress. And, you know, anytime you can be talking about women's basketball, that's a good thing.
I want to ask you about the coaching perspective against Caitlin, because she's in the Big Ten. She was in the Big Ten. You had to face her a couple times a year. What do you do to game plan for a superstar, whether it's Caitlin or one of the best that you face? What do you say to your player that's assigned, that has a defensive assignment, to try to even keep her in check? How do you game plan for a superstar like Caitlin Clark?
Well, first of all, you hope she has an off night, right? So as a coach, you obviously are motivating your players, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity to play against someone, especially this year, that was on the verge of breaking records. And then obviously did and accomplished so many things. So if you can't get motivated to play against, quote unquote, the greatest women's basketball player of all time in college, right? Because that's what she did. She broke so many scoring records and that kind of stuff. I don't know what'll motivate you. So I thought our young women did a really good job, but it's pick your poison, right? If you try to take her scoring away, she's going to pound you with, you know, 10 to 15 assists. If you try to take, you know, away her passing and let her go for 40, well, then does somebody else go off, you know? So this year, our first time we played them, we tried to take away, you know, her scoring, and her running mate had about 47 on us as the post player. She's had a career night. And then in the conference tournament, you know, Caitlin had, she struggled. You know, I thought we defended her really well. We face guarded her. I think she struggled from the floor, was like almost one for 12 from three, but then her other teammates went off. So it was really hard, because Iowa did a great job putting pieces around her, putting shooters around her, playing a really good style that kind of fit into Caitlin's game. So I think she's one of the hardest players to game plan against, because not only can she score at will, but her vision is next level. She's thinking three steps ahead of you. Her passing is underrated. Her basketball IQ is through the roof. So you really, the biggest thing you can do is try to exploit her on the defensive end and get her tired. But, you know, she's put herself in such a phenomenal conditioning shape and done a great job keeping her body, you know, safe and free from injury. So you just can't say enough about her as a player and as a competitor.
How have Caitlin effect? We'll call it the Caitlin effect. How's that affected Penn State specifically? Like, are you seeing more popularity on campus, ticket sales, all of those things? Your crowds are getting larger.
Well, I think first and foremost, more people are talking about women's basketball. So whether they're necessarily talking about Penn State basketball yet or not, they're getting more intrigued with the sport. They're seeing more games on TV. They're seeing more coverage on, you know, social media, which in turn is then going to hopefully get them more excited about coming to watch our games and kind of to see the sport grow. Obviously, when, you know, she came to us, she didn't unfortunately come to the BJC last year. We went to Iowa, but the year before, obviously, we had our best crowd of the season when she was here. But the Caitlin Clark effect is real. I mean, we played them in the conference tournament, and you know, people were standing in line for 4 hours trying to get into the Target Center in Minneapolis. And you know, you're seeing little kids, you're seeing grown men and women in Caitlin Clark jerseys. And, you know, my hope is that these Caitlin Clark fans not only just follow her career, but they eventually become women's basketball fans and not just Caitlin Clark fans. And I think that's what happens with superstars, and that's how leagues evolve, and that's how sports evolve. And, you know, I think that's going to happen. I hope that happens. And, you know, testament to her, but also the media and everybody who's done a great job covering her.
Yeah, for sure.
House, why don't you talk about the Olympics? Because I know that's something that you've been bringing up a lot.
Just, I know, Coach, you've probably heard so many of the commentaries at this point, and to the extent that there's a debate, but for just the lay public like us, and sure, we're super fans, we have a sports podcast, it makes no sense to us. I mean, here we have been talking for 10 minutes on Caitlin Clark. She has completely gripped the entire sports world, men's, women's, all sports. And the biggest stage once every 4 years for sports is the Olympics. The USA has drubbed the whole world so dominantly that it's not been really must-see TV, because it's just an automatic. It's like, okay, we're going to get the gold medal. There, nobody else has caught up to the women's game, I feel, like the way a lot of the men's teams have caught up to the USA men's. And so we ask ourselves, I know that there's preparation, there's other women that have been on the team, there's a lot of people who've been put in their blood, sweat, and tears, but did the Olympic Committee pass up on an opportunity for what seemed like, pardon the pun, a layup to include Caitlin on that team?
Yeah. Well, I think you got to look at it from two different lenses, right? If you want to look at it from the marketing lens and you want to look at it from a business decision, right? If you're considering that USA basketball is a business, then yeah, it probably would have made sense to put her on the roster from a, you know, fans perspective, from a viewership, from a just sheer, you know, people following the USA basketball team. But then if you're looking at it from a lens of, hey, we're coaches who are putting people on who have, you know, been grinding for the last 4 years to make this team and develop a roster of, you know, vets who have paved their way, who have paid their dues, and who have been prepping for this opportunity for the last 4 years, it becomes a little bit different of a discussion, right? If you actually look at the USA basketball roster, which I'm sure you guys have, it's really hard to pinpoint who you would leave off the roster. You know, you look at the vet of Diana Taurasi, who's at the end of her career, and who's done so much for the game, who's been a goat in her own right. Right. Would it have make sense for her to step aside and let Caitlin come on and do that? You know, I don't know. That's obviously up for debate, but Diana Taurasi has done so much for the game to be able to put Caitlin in a position to have the limelight that she's having. So does she deserve to go on a high note and win one more gold medal? You know? So when you look at the roster, it's pretty hard. Like, they might not have the notoriety as Caitlin, but they've been deserving, and they're equally as good, and they're very talented. Caitlin's obviously going to have her time, but striking while the iron's hot would have obviously been great and made a huge impact for the sport. So I think we could debate this all night, and you could say, hey, where they went wrong or where they went right, depending on which lens you're looking at it. But it all depends on what lens you're viewing the decision from.
By the way, I like it. On the international game this week in the NBA draft, I think we're likely to see the top two picks probably be foreign players, probably be a Frenchman and a guy from Australia. I'm curious, at the college level, are coaches recruiting internationally yet? Have there been player development? Where are the countries that we should be paying attention to look for up and coming players that we're going to start seeing on American campuses in the women's college basketball game?
I think we're right on the verge of the international game really exploding, similar to the men, right? Following that trend. There's phenomenal coaches overseas, phenomenal systems. Obviously, they've done a really good job in places like Spain, places like France, Australia. You know, there's some really good teams out there that can compete. And they might not necessarily have the depth that the U.S. has yet, but they have talent and they have skill and they have size. And I think it's catching up. But you're seeing now, like, obviously, South Carolina's, you know, draft pick who was top five, you know, she was international. You go down the list, even with the WNBA draft this year, there was a lot of international players chosen in the top, you know, first round. So it's coming. And I think it's really catching up, which is fun for the sport and fun for USA to have some competition out there, even not only necessarily the Olympic team, but when you talk about, you know, the U-17s or the U-18s or the U-16s, you know, the teams that are prepping to become Olympians in the future, for them to start having more competitive games is huge.
It sounds like there's a possibility that Caitlin, even though she wasn't included in the initial roster, may make it either as an alternate or... House, I think you mentioned that one of the players is injured and they may have to replace her.
Chelsea Gray. Right.
Yeah. So there's still that possibility that we'll see her as an alternate or replacing somebody. I hope we get to see her.
I maintain my position. Don't do it, Caitlin. Stay away from it now. There is no win for you going on that team at this point. I would stay away from it. Coach, I want to ask you about two things. That you're sort of sitting there, you know, dealing with now, and I'm curious about transfer portal and name, image, and likeness stuff, and how much, if that's that's affecting what you're seeing in women's basketball.
Yeah, I think, you know, the transfer portal, obviously, in all sports is the hot topic right now, and it's a phenomenon throughout all of college athletics. Men's and women's basketball pretty much equally have, you know, a tremendous amount of transfers right now. I think it kind of goes hand in hand with name, image, and likeness, right? You know, people, you know, trying to figure out where is the best fit for them monetarily or contract wise or whatever it might be, name, image, and likeness. And then, you know, now that there's the rules that you don't have to sit out, and you can kind of honestly be a free agent every year to test the waters. I think it's a hard setup. It's a hard setup, honestly, for the student athletes and a hard setup for us as coaches that are trying to build programs versus just teams. I think it's hard for the student athletes to build some camaraderie within their teammates, you know, to build this 4-year chemistry and, you know, teammates for life type of vibe. Unfortunately, it's the era that we're in right now. I think revenue sharing will hopefully slow this down a little bit in the future. And I think things will start to settle down. But there's obviously always going to be the option for them to go find a better opportunity or a different opportunity if something prevents itself or presents itself, or if they just want a different fit or things aren't going their way. But it's tough. It's tough for us that have been in the business for, you know, over 25 years and love to build programs versus just teams.
Do the kids know? You know, I would think that transferring around really affects their college experience just in general. Take away the sports part of it, the athletics part. You know, I look back at my 4 years in college, and I made great friends because I spent 4 years with them. And do the kids realize yet? Because it is relatively new. It's new for the student athletes too. Do they realize what they're giving up when they move from school to school?
You know, I don't think they do yet. I think this will be a decision that they kind of look back on and decide, hey, that was good for me, or that necessarily wasn't, depending. But I think it's really hard to build those really authentic bonds if you're not at a place for 2 or 3 years. It's just obviously the nature of human relationships, right? And authenticity and getting to know a group and shared adversity or shared experiences together. you know, I think something that's going to really slow it down too is this when the COVID years is done. You know, I think the transfer is spiked so high because a lot of the players have an extra year and they have the ability after graduation to go get another degree somewhere. And I think that's why the numbers are so high right now, is we're in the flux of that COVID year still, which makes things really kind of funky. And it's my hope, and even for the student athletes hope, that these numbers drop when, you know, these COVID years go away.
That's interesting. I mean, obviously in men's college basketball, the guy graduating after 4 years and then going to an elite program to try to, you know, get a natty and, you know, whatever graduate degree is, this is the last year for them to do that. This is the last year we'll see the 5 year guys. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking you might see the same effect in women's basketball. You have more, less transfer portal.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we're all hoping. Mm-hmm.
How's NIL affected recruiting for you? I assume when you're at Marquette, the pre-NIL years, you go into a young girl's living room with their parents, you know, you're selling this program. What is it like now? Is it more where they're making demands and they want to know what's in it for them? What's my contract going to look like? How has it evolved over the last, you know, few years?
Yeah, honestly, it is a lot of that. It's a lot of negotiating with, you know, obviously the name, image, and likeness department, the collectives. You know,
the
with
fact they have a department is amazing.
Yeah,
right.
You know, yeah, the name, image, and likeness agencies, and you know, the players have agents, and the players are working with different collectives. I think things are like drastically going to change August 25. When revenue sharing comes about, that'll look different. You know, contracts will look different. You know, negotiations and, you know, how every team manages is going to be different. I think us as head coaches are going to be more like general managers. You know, for us, that's one thing we're really kind of trying to explore right now, because we know this is coming, right? Is how to educate ourselves to the best of our ability. You know, I know I'm going to go be talking to a lot of WNBA GMs, trying to figure out, because they've been doing this for a while, how to manage a roster, how to manage your quote unquote salary cap. And, you know, how to do that.
Well, so a new day. I can't even imagine. What are they telling y'all about revenue sharing? I mean, how's it going to work?
Yeah. I mean, it's all still up in the air. You know, it's obviously, you guys probably have seen the articles, you know, and, the lawsuits that have been happening. Right. So, everything's up in the air right now, and no one really knows what it's going to look like. So we know as much as you guys know, you know, not much is out there yet. I think the powers at will here and the lawyers are trying to sort this all out. But, I think all of us, including the Big Ten, is trying to be, on the forefront and obviously going to be setting the tone with the SEC. But it's going to be a new world. So college athletics as we know it is going to drastically change. And, you know, we're excited to kind of see what happens. But as much as we know is everything you can know out online and, you know, out on the articles that have been, you know, from all the lawsuits that have been happening with NCAA and antitrust laws and everything like that.
What a new
Coach,
day.
A couple questions on that. I want to know, because we've talked about a lot of different topics. What are you excited about this year in women's college hoops as far as a team, a player you want to see? And then so that you can say what you really want to do, I want to hear what you're excited about for Penn State this season. Yeah. So I want to break it out so you can speak about college hoops in general and then about your team.
Yeah, well, first of all, I mean, obviously – piggybacking off of Caitlin Clark's success last year, there were a ton of phenomenal freshmen in the NCAA last year for women's basketball. Obviously, you got Juju Watkins down at USC. You got Hannah Hidalgo at you know, Notre Dame. So I think the game is in really, really good hands. And I think hopefully we just kind of you know, continue this trend with the media following us and capitalize off the gains that we've made and that Caitlin was able to kind of help draw us to. And, you know, for us, the Big Ten is drastically going to change this year with four teams coming in. Obviously, Juju Watkins coming in and being
that's true.
Play. We played them last year on a neutral site in the Bahamas and lost by one. So that game I'm really excited for. UCLA, USC are going to be two top five teams that obviously get added, Oregon and Washington. So I believe we're going to have the best conference in America, top to bottom. So I'm mostly looking forward to the competitiveness of it and kind of seeing these young guns in our game continue the torch. And hopefully keep propelling the game forward like they've been doing the last couple years off of Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and this trend of following women's hoops.
Hopefully there's
how about your squad? Girls.
Yeah.
Tell us about Penn State squad.
Yeah. So we got a lot of good returners coming back. I think Jayla Oden's one, you know, for people to really keep an eye on. She's super shifty, can score from all three levels, has a knack for the mid-range game, but can also shoot the three, loves to play in transition. I look for her to have a really good year for us. Allie Campbell is somebody who, you know, was a high school All-American who's kind of been injury plagued her first 4 years, but has her COVID year. And I look for her to have an awesome year now that she's healthy. We got some, you know, really good transfers. Gracie Merkel is a name for everybody to know in the area. She's 6'6", led the country in field goal percentage 2 years ago. Didn't play this past season, but transferred into us. Phenomenal hands, great footwork. I think she can be one of the best posts in the country, specifically in the Big Ten, but she's got great potential. And then we have a transfer coming in, Gabby Elliott out of Michigan State, who was a all ACC freshman team out of Clemson before she transferred. So we got some really good pieces, got a great freshman class coming in. We got five freshmen that I think are really going to do some damage that hopefully we can build with and grow with and get old and stay old. You know, as Jay Wright always used to say, right? So really pumped about the future. We'll be the smartest team probably that I've coached here IQ wise on the court, really good chemistry. And I'm just excited to see what we can do and make that NCAA tournament.
Well, we're really excited that you have optimism for a big year. Hopefully, NCAA tournament bid this year. We're gonna on the SMQBs. We're gonna follow you very closely and hopefully have you back routinely as our expert on women's basketball. We really appreciate you coming on. And a hat tip to our good friends Matt and Mia Rosenberg.
Best.
That's right.
Best
for letting us get introduced to Carolyn and. Having her come on our podcast. So really appreciate it.
I've got two Penn State families in my office here, actually. My office admin and my go-to paralegal just was there for orientation. Her daughter's going and will be a freshman this fall. So
around. Let's go.
Yeah. And we have talked about having an SMQB's retreat up at Penn State for a game. So we'll have to make that happen now.
Well, we can make the virtual bar sessions a reality in-person one. So I will
exactly.
Help
you.
Let me know.
It, yeah.
But I just want to thank you guys for having me and also, you know, covering women's sports too and giving us the platform to continue to grow. So I just really appreciate you. And even though Caitlin Clark's not on the Olympic team, keep watching because there's some studs to watch as well. But really
100%. And we'll be covering it.
Keep doing it.
Thank you so much, Coach. Thanks for
being
on.
Thanks, Coach. Good luck.
Thank you, Coach.
All right. Have fun, fellas.
Okay.
See ya.
All right. We are.
See ya.
We're supposed to say Penn State now.
Good stuff.
That's fun. You say Penn State after she says we are. You guys got that?
Oh, I didn't think you had to actually say it. I thought it was a given.
That's a thing?
Yeah, that's a thing.
We just screwed that up?
We screwed that up.
When I hear we are, we go Georgetown. That's what comes out next.
What do you say? We are what?
Penn State.
We is that like Penn OHIO?
Right. Listen,
hey, we didn't have a heads up.
She was awesome.
We're going to do
she
that road incredibly... trip and we're going to do that whiteout and you'll see what a spirit place that place is.
I can't
how
wait.
Thoughtful was she on all that stuff? She was great. I mean, that was a lot
that
of fun.
That was
really great. Enjoyed that, Coach. Thank you for being on. I hope you listen to this because that was a lot of fun for us and some really good insight.
I tell you what, that revenue sharing thing, that's mind blowing.
I mean, and she said
obviously I was thinking
the term free agent, and then she said it, and I was like, that. I mean, that's these kids. They have more free agent rights than most professional athletes because they could be free agent any year they want, right? At least right
what about
now.
We're going to talk to WNBA teams about salary caps and stuff.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
But you know, you talk about these thoughtful answers. I was just listening to her as a coach and thinking, if I had a kid and I'm shopping around, like, to shape my daughter, and have a role model and have someone who thinks through the game. And I don't know, that was a really, really impressive time that we had with her. That was great.
I agree. Good stuff. All right. Well, we got some other sports we got to cover too, though, tonight. So, hey, there's a little hockey game taking place. Milk, have you heard anything about it?
All I know is, like, all the entire country of Canada is going to be watching this game tonight. And I don't know what's going to happen. But I cannot believe that Florida shit the bed. I had them in six taking it. I thought this thing was over at 3-0 last Monday. When we talked, we were at 3-1. I thought it was going to end on Tuesday. It has been a tale of six games. First three, they outscored Edmonton 11-4. The next three games, they got outscored 18-5. Bobrovsky has been a tale of two goalies. Now maybe there's some injury issues there or whatever, but I mean, the defense, which has been unbelievable, that's what got them here, has collapsed the last six games. They give literally 18 goals and the last three games. He's got to step up his game. I don't know who you'd rather be at this point. I mean, Edmonton obviously has all the momentum. They are at Florida tonight. The pressure of giving up a three-game lead has to be enormous on this team. I don't know how this is going to go. You know, they're all the talk is it's a game seven changes everything. It's a whole new thing. You know, throw the collapse to the side. I don't think so. I think Edmonton is going to come back and win this. I can't believe I'm going to say that.
Do you agree that it seems to me if Edmonton scores first, that is going to be so deflating. If Florida scores first, Edmonton's been behind everything. They've been playing catch up the whole series. They're not going to be shaken the way Florida will be, and that arena will go silent if Edmonton scores first.
It might be a who scores first type of game.
That might be I think this series and this game comes down to literally the leadership on the ice tonight. This series reminds me a little bit about the epic famous 94 series that the Rangers had against Vancouver, when Messier just put the team on his shoulders and brought them to a historic Stanley Cup. McDavid is doing that. He's a young kid, but you see his leadership on the ice, even when he's scoring goals. It's all like there's ice in his veins, and it's a very, very controlled environment for that Edmonton right now, Edmonton team. The Florida players, you can see panic in their eyes on the ice. They've got to do something tonight. And I agree, obviously the first goal would do that, but they have to do something to just calm down and realize they've got the skill. They were, like you said, Milk, it was a tale of two totally different series. They were dominating for three games, like dominating. They got to find that groove in the first period, the first 5 minutes.
Yeah. Or it can get away very quickly.
It is.
It's absolutely shocking.
It is also equally as shocking that we're talking about hockey and it's 98 degrees on half of the country right now. So, like,
over 100 here.
This is
history, guys. I mean, since 1942, that's the last time that a NHL team came back from 3-0, and it's the only time in championship history of any of the four sports that have the seven-game series. Toronto, there you go. Canada overcame Detroit. They had a 3-0 deficit, and they overcame Detroit in Game 7. So, you know, all of Canada can hang their hat on that. But, I mean, Game 7's on home ice just don't mean much.
Isn't it really been 31 years since Canada's had the cup? I heard that today somewhere. Is that possible, that right?
I feel 93. Like
Montreal. Yeah. It was in the 90s. It was early
93.
90s.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. That's
early one. And it's been since 1990, since Edmonton.
Isn't that what Florida has going for them, though? It's like Canada's going to fuck this up.
Right. Are you saying Canada's not good at hockey? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they will somehow screw this up. It's there on a silver platter. That's the only thing holding me back.
All right. I mean, how do you think friend Moose Jaw is feeling right now?
I don't.
Bittersweet. I mean,
not his like team.
Edmonton. It's not his team. It's not,
not his team. But it's Team Canada. I mean, it's kind of, you know, a little international flavor.
I mean, that's
yeah. But other than Florida, who the fuck wants Florida to have the Stanley Cup anyway? I mean,
not
Florida
me.
That's fair.
Never have a cup. No Florida team should ever have a cup. Just like no Texas team should have the cup.
What?
All right, let
Connor McDavid. Connor McDavid has his chance to put his name into history as the next great one tonight. And that's
absolutely
it's not
absolutely yeah. will. Absolutely.
All right, well, check it out. We got another final game too tonight. House, right?
100 degrees. It is 100 degrees in Omaha, Nebraska. For what is, I told you guys before this whole thing started, just turn on college baseball. I hope a lot of our listeners have seen it because this has been awesome. I mean, walk-off home runs, just it's college baseball is a little bit closer to what college sports should still be about. It's so hard to break into the ranks of the pros that you still see relative amateurism. Yeah, the Tennessee team has a lot of guys that are going to be in the pros, but these college teams are so fun to watch. But guys, there are some really cool stats about tonight. It's the number one team versus the number three team. Tennessee's number one, A&M's number three. Neither team has ever won a national title. The last time two teams played in the College World Series for a championship where neither had won a national title was in 2014 when Virginia faced Vandy. This is the fifth consecutive NCAA championship for the SEC. This has become the SEC tournament. Both these teams are from the SEC, and no matter what, an SEC team will be crowned champion again for the fifth consecutive year. Tennessee is the most home runs in the nation. A&M is number four. A&M has the third best ERA in the nation. Tennessee is number five. We are seeing pretty much the two best teams you could see on the stage. Tennessee is going for 60 wins. If they get a win tonight in their championship, wow, it will be the 60th win, which no SEC team has ever done. They are putting on the mound tonight. A&M's not announced their starter, but Tennessee's putting on the mound tonight a guy named Xander Sechrist, who's given up a total of four earned runs in his last 29 and a third innings. So they've got their stopper.
Is that Ryan's kid? That's Ryan's kid, right?
What?
Ryan Sechrist?
No, yes, exactly.
Close cousins. I just think that wait, I hope you guys got that split screen potential because 7 o'clock Eastern is the Tennessee game. And then was it 8 o'clock for the hockey game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're hour apart.
House, by the way, A&M is, I believe, starting Justin Lampkin, who, and the only reason I know that is because it's the guy behind me, and he pitched in both Gator games and absolutely dominated, like 15 strikeouts. I think he gave up four hits, like in two games or something. I have Tennessee winning this whole thing. I said it when we started. This is the only pitcher I would put out there. This is going to be the toughest pitcher that they face. I think if he comes out there and pitches the way he did against Florida, I think they can win.
When did he pitch
thing
last?
On that? Well, I don't know.
Uh-huh. When did he
know
pitch
when he pitched
last?
When did he what?
Pitch last. Is he on short rest or what?
He's on a pretty short rest. He's pitched like Tennessee's pitcher hasn't pitched since Florida State. I think this guy's gone. He's gone two times against Florida. So that was like a week ago. I don't know if he.
Yeah.
I think he might be on regular rest because it seemed like that both teams got into the finals pretty quick. And there was like 3 days before the tournament finals started.
I saw something on the Pat McAfee show. They had this guy on who's a college baseball expert who basically said most of these teams have, I mean, both these teams have most all of their players available to them. And so these coaches, obviously there's no game after this. These coaches are just going to empty the bench. And the guy said, basically, if you're a pitcher and you walk two batters in a row, goodbye. Bullpen opens up. Next guy comes in.
Yeah, there's no tomorrow.
There's no tomorrow.
Or you're pitching 150 pitches.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Your arm's going to fall off, but hey, just you win.
Nothing says drama like a game three. That's for sure. So, you know, let's do it.
It'll be fun. It's a fun night for sports on a fun Monday.
Who's got a punch? Don't call it a comeback.
I mean,
no one, a clean week. There's no referee house that you want to attack. Nothing.
I'll just say this. I'll punch the whole system of VAR. It is so stupid. If you guys are watching any of this, the Euros or the Copa America, and you're talking about like the big toe of a cleat. Yeah. The big toe of a cleat, like being over a line. It hasn't completely changed the fortunes of a team, but it's gotten damn near close. I think they got to figure out something with VAR. I don't know what the exact solution is, but yes, technically offsides, if you have a part of your body that's ahead of the other part. Okay. But it's gotta be like the full appendage or like it, I don't know. It's so stupid right now. And for that, just for the system of VAR, I just want to punch VAR.
Okay. All right, that's good. I'll take that. I'll take you punching a virtual referee. That's on. Yeah,
I've got a milk slap for soccer.
All right.
And House, you can fill me in. This is on a very like small amount of data and TV time I've seen, but Alexi Lawless really annoys the shit out of me.
Oh, and a lot of other people.
Like he's so negative. Like we won yesterday. And then every time they go to him, he's like, well, he sucked, actually. I grade him like a D. We stake. It's just all negative. Everything is terrible always. And he's just bothering me. So
all the soccer people say he literally knows nothing about, like next to nothing about soccer. He never has really good insider analysis.
Trading on his name. That's it.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
How did the U.S. do yesterday, though?
Well, I was going to talk about it a little bit on the buzzers, but look, if you're not watching Copa America yet, besides the fact that you get to see, you know, Messi on Argentina and some of the greatest young players in the world on Brazil, Christian Pulisic is the star that we have needed for a long time, since like the days of Landon Donovan and Claudia Reyna. We have not had a guy with ice in his veins. And that shot that he made in the first 2.5 minutes last night against, yes, a horrible Bolivia team, but he just talk about like the hockey game, taking over the game right from the very beginning. He just took over the game. And then, you know, once you start to get into soccer, you see like they get match ratings for what is your overall play on like a 0 to 10.0 scale. His match rating was almost like a 9 last night. He almost played a perfect game last night. He just had an insane, insane game. Go USA.
Who's up next?
Oh, gosh. So Panama. I know we have Panama and Uruguay.
Panama on Thursday.
Yeah, Panama on Thursday, and then Uruguay, who's very good. Uruguay is very, very good. So we really got to take care of business with Panama. And they've given us fits in the past in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. So we've got to take care of business with them.
Yeah.
All right. Euro's heating up.
Let's get back on the agenda. Who's got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
You do. What?
I do. Rooster called in one. Yes. This is a good story. So if you, I don't want to make light of it, but if you're going to sexually assault someone, don't do it next to a Taekwondo studio.
Oh,
don't do it next to a family of Taekwondo instructors.
Oh, gosh.
Because that's what happened this week.
Is this a lasso or a punch?
This is a lasso. We're lassoing the family. So
resulting in a punch.
Family, they have a Taekwondo studio in, is it Katy or Katy, Texas? Katy, right?
Katie.
It is Katie. It's, yeah, they don't know how to spell shit in Texas, huh?
Hey, right, so anyway, Katie.
Don't be catty about it.
Nice. Yeah, I won't. So anyway, the family comes into the Yongin Taekwondo School to prepare for their classes in the evening. There's five members of the family, all instructors. And they hear what they think is a scream from next door, but they sort of look in and they don't see anything. And then they're just getting ready for their classes and they hear another loud scream. And at this point, they take off next door into the shop next door. They go in, the door's unlocked, they go in, but there's nobody there and it's quiet. But the father just doesn't stop and he goes and starts opening every door in the place and opens up the, you know, the back door to the storefront, whatever it was. And he finds this man who is sexually assaulting this woman. He's got her pinned down, his hand over his mouth. And this family of Taekwondo instructors, I mean, they pulled the guy off of her. They held him on the ground until the police came. They took care of the woman. And I mean, really just... a horrific thing already just to be in that situation, but stop something from that could have gotten actually, believe it or not, worse. And so they get a lasso for rushing in to and helping this lady out. Good job to the On family in nice. Katy, Texas. All right, who's got a buzzer beater?
So I just want to tell folks we would normally cover this in greater depth, but maybe the lack of talent this year. This week will be the NBA draft. It's kind of snuck up on us quietly. I know that at least one of our SMQBs should be very zeroed in, considering he has the number two pick, Bison.
Yeah.
Predictions are that you are going to take Alex Saar, a 7-footer from Australia. You could use someone in the middle, but there's nobody that most of the pundits are saying there's nobody that we're going to look back at and say this was like a runaway game changer. There's maybe some diamonds in the rough between 10 to picks 10 to 20. It's predicted that there's going to be a lot of movement because there's so many like, this guy could go a 5, he could go a 15. I think down the road, this is definitely going to be the kind of draft where we don't see it in rookie season, but we see it a lot more in year three. There will probably be some, like I said, diamonds in the rough, but it apparently Zachary Rezacker, a 6'8 wing from France, is likely going to be the number one overall pick to the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks, Wizard, Rockets, San Antonio, Pistons, and Charlotte pick the top six. So if you have a team that needs to change its fortunes, don't expect this necessarily to come to you in the draft this year, but good luck this week in the NBA draft.
Don't be surprised to see the Wizards trade that pick and
really
pick back some additional picks. Yeah, I mean, you know, doesn't it kind of suck to have the second pick and end up with a guy who might be like a decent wing player at some point? You know, I mean, I don't know.
Especially in this draft.
Yeah, I think it's possible they trade back.
So this is the first year that they're doing it on two decks. Traditionally, they've done it both rounds in one night, but this year they're breaking it up. So look for the drama in round two of what does Bronny James, what does he go? Where is he going
to go
to, right? That's where the drama's building. I mean,
he's getting picked? I thought he sucked at USC.
Well,
there's an outside chance. I do think
his father might, you know. He will be picked. I mean, I think he's going to be picked. I mean, second round's not a guarantee.
But is he good? Is he good or not? You guys tell me, is he like a really good player?
People say that he's better than he showed at USC. You are right.
He's had a very scary year at USC, too.
He did have that. All right. That's true.
All right. I've got a quick one. I don't know if you guys got a chance to see any of the golf yesterday, but I know it's shocking development. Scottie Scheffler won his 6th tournament this year, which is just setting all kinds of records.
Scottie is now up to like $2 million on a year.
He's won $27 million this year. But he ended up winning in a playoff. The drama though was as they're getting ready to putt out on 18, There were six environmental protesters who ran out on the green and dropped some canisters of powder, red and blue or white powder, jumped in the bunker, and you know, the cops all got them, you know, and get them out. It's kind of rattled everybody. And there's obviously, you've seen all the jokes about, you know, how all the cops started running and Scotty was having a little PTSD, but
really.
I haven't seen that. Send them,
who was the guy who got tackled a couple of years ago on the, where he was standing on the green and there was like people rushed and they tackled him and he was a player who got tackled too? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, it was a Canadian Open.
Yeah, I think
it was a fellow Canadian who was excited for his buddy who won and he just got steamrolled by the Mounties.
Somebody tweeted that they've arrested five protesters and so-and-so just got tackled on the green and he's not even in the tournament this year. Something like that. It was so funny.
That's funny.
Train wreck. All right. Any other buzzers? All right. Good show, guys. That was fun.
Impressive. Thanks. 59 for Cameron Young, by the way. That was.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Great interview with Coach T. Appreciate it. Good show tonight. Lots of exciting things tonight.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.